committee meeting, and we have a new member today, and we're going to go through for introductions for Linda's benefit with everyone. Since it's a small group, we can do that quickly, and then I'll give an update and kind of follow the agenda topics schedule, and hopefully it won't be too long. So we'll start with Nancy.
I'm Nancy Cordry. I'm Administrative Secretary for Suzy.
And she takes the minutes of the pension meeting and keeps it. We are on the internet now, and we do have on our web page. The old agendas and the minutes are available, which is kind of new last year in the last 3 months, would you say?
That's
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Last month.
Online.
The last month.
Yeah.
They're live online. Live
audio
online.
Will be put on there too after the meeting is over.
And they are public meetings. It's just, you don't have any public today.
My name is Jeff James, and I'm Director of Engineering and Accounting.
Jeff is the employee representative.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm Karen Brewington, Director of Human Resources. Hi.
Todd is also on the committee, but he couldn't make it today. I'm Susan Webb, the Finance Director.
Dave Baker, retiree.
Who I know.
Dave's now the retiree representative. And
I'm Linda Messick. I'm CEO with Community Bank Delaware over in Lewis.
And the other community member is Hugh Leahy from Delaware Community Foundation, who couldn't make it today. And I apologize, the meeting date got changed. But scheduling the first meeting was hard because it was so close, and to get 9 or 10 people within the next couple of weeks was very hard. And we've bounced around a bit. But the initial letter that you got in February 9th, that listed the meetings, we are going to stick to that best we can, May, August, and November. Actually, I think we had the different date that we had. The room wasn't available. So, I mean, there was just some things going on that we couldn't have it in February. So, we have a new committee, new ordinances that the County Council passed in late 2011 that ordinances that define the makeup of the pension committee, and it is, just as we've seen, an employee representative, the director of our human resource director, county administrator, finance director, and those last three are permanent positions. The two community members, the retiree and the employee representative, are 4-year terms and will rotate as council sees fit. So that's what we're starting with. The other thing that we changed in the ordinance is a way that we can purchase investments now. We do not have to go through the RFP process. If we want to invest money in Dodge and Cox and change it from Vanguard, because we've decided as a committee board to do that, and we took it to County Council for a recommendation and they agreed, then we can just do that. We don't have to spend money on an RFP process and make it very lengthy. So there are the new things going into 2012. I hope, like the letter says, to have 4 meetings and to review our assets every quarter, talk about things that are going on. There could be some changes to the county's pension plan as terms of new employees in the budget. We have been asked to look at what options we could have for new employees rather than the defined benefit plan, which is very rich with benefits and expensive over time. And so we are looking at maybe new employees doing something different with a contributory piece or a defined contribution or contributing some percentage to the defined benefit. So we're just in that stage right now. So hopefully, you know, we can keep up to date. We've had a lot going on. We've had investment statements. We had the investment that we did that we didn't, you know, the, I need to report on that too, where the county did invested in the fire service fund, and the pension fund's going to oversee that, but it's our own internal investment, so it's kind of strange. And Michael Schoen from Pierce Park Group is our consultant, and for Linda's benefit, you've been our consultant third year? Probably third annual review.
We've had 3 annual reviews.
Annual
so
reviews.
This is sort of maybe the beginning of the fourth year.
Okay. So they've reviewed our pension plan for 3 years, an annual review, and they have helped us develop policy statements and rebalance portfolio and choose investment managers and all that background work that we need to do, what to do with our annual contribution. We make an annual contribution that's set with the budget, excuse me, by the end of December every year into the pension fund and the OPEB fund so that it gets counted for the actuary report, which is as of January 1st. And then the actuary gives us a number to budget for the pension contribution, and then we make it by December. This year, it so happened we had a good fiscal year that we made an extra $960,000 to each fund over and above the annual contribution. So, as you can see, that's helped us out. What Pierce Park Group has done today is done a little bit of work on rebalancing. And
a lot of work, not a little bit.
Sorry. And some stuff that we need to take care of. One other thing, the fixed asset did get moved to take us back at the very end of last year, what the council has approved. We still take our, whatever the committee decides as a group, we still take into county council as a recommendation. So whatever the vote might be that comes before the committee, we still go to council to get their approval, and then if we get their approval, then I do whatever's necessary to move the money or what have you, make the contribution. And it usually goes very smooth. It's council very receptive to the committee and having a consultant, and it's not really a big controversy. At the end of the last year, we held off with our OPEB fixed asset investment because we wanted to put it with Wilmington Trust as the pension funds or the pension funds fixed asset is, but the attorney advised us against that. They suggested we do an RFP. Since the timing was so close, rather than do that, we just waited, and then council did approve to go ahead and move the fixed asset portion of our allocation, which is 60-40, into Wilmington Trust and open up that fund on behalf of the OPEB, and I did that, and we have, it's agreement and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's where we left off. The OPEB now has a fixed asset portion and equity assets, as well as a pension. Now we had the extra contribution, so we've got to look at what we need to do to rebalance, and it does need to rebalance back to our investment statement because it's a little out of whack. And I think it's important that we keep it where we said we were going to keep it. You know what I mean? That we don't want to be too heavy in fixed assets or too heavy in global, or because over the long term, where we set our policy statement allocation is where we need to be. So, if you want to take it from here, Michael, since this, he has prepared a rebalancing options for us to consider at this point. That's what we're doing now. We're starting the year. Everything's the contributions made. Everything's in the funds, and we're starting fresh.
Okay. So, if you just turned it right in front of the first tab, Susie covered most of what was under number one, but I thought it was of benefit to everybody, especially to you, since it is, what are the accomplishments that have occurred over the last 3 years, and then specifically 2011, then the rebalancing of the OPEB and the pension assets, and then the performance report. What we did is we took just the OPEB fund and did a performance report, and in a moment I'll explain why just the OPEB and not the pension. And then Susie asked us to do prepare a proposal because in the past, what you've had us do is just do an end-of-year report, end-of-year being really the end of September, because that's when you'd have the meetings, you'd have your actuarial reports, and the contribution would come in, and you'd want to know where the money should be invested, but analyzing where you are. And then the fifth point was what I call the agenda for 2012, and this is just really more for discussion, but some of the things I thought you might want to consider accomplishing in 2012. For both of the funds. So if you go into the first tab, as I said, Susie hit on most of these, so I'll just quickly touch on them. But over the past 3 years, you know, you now have a written investment policy statement. You've set a strategic asset mix. So your asset mix is targeted, as defined in the investment policy statement, to be 48% domestic stocks, 12% international, and 40% fixed income. 40% fixed income is benchmarked to the intermediate government index. So it's a quite conservative benchmark for fixed income, and we'll get into that in a minute here. You hired DuPont Capital. You hired Wilmington Trust as a fixed income manager. You hired Vanguard Global as the global equity manager. Global meaning that it invests in U.S. and non-U.S. stocks. So just to make sure that's clear, by international means just non-U.S. Global means U.S. and non-U.S. You terminated the Wilmington Trust Mutual Fund Program. In essence, Wilmington Trust was managing, they would put money into some of their own mutual funds. They were also picking outside mutual funds for you. What you did is you moved that over and just said, Wilmington Trust, just do bonds for us. That's had considerable savings for you cost-wise, and then your equities you picked up elsewhere. And then designed a program to match the one-year benefit payments with the investment proceeds. So when you make your contributions, right now, as Susie had mentioned earlier, your contributions are just about equal to your benefit outflows. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to take the money, you give it to the stock managers, you're invested long-term, and then within the course of the year, you have to start pulling the money out, and inevitably, it's at the wrong time. After the market's gone down, it just so happened, seems to happen that way. So instead, you're having your what we call it, short-term assets used against short-term liabilities, intermediate assets against intermediate liabilities, and long-term assets against long-term liabilities. So, you know, liability matching. On the OPEB side, you now have a written investment policy statement, which was not done at the same time as the pension. It was a year later. You set a strategic asset mix, same one as you have for the pension. Same idea of matching benefit payments with outflows, and so your contribution is going and are going into short-term holdings. You're not, they're not investing it long-term because you know you're going to have that cash outflow during the course of the year. You hired Wilmington Trust as a fixed income manager after going through a search process in the other areas. And then you hired 5 equity mutual funds for the rest of the portfolio mix. Accomplishments specifically in 2011, you now have the county resolution that allow you to restructure your investment committee and also broaden authority in a sense that you can go out and you can pick managers to manage your money. You don't have to go through the RFP process. And as you know, RFP processes sometimes can be very worthwhile, but for yourselves, it actually became a bit of a stumbling block that actually prohibited you from doing some of the things on as timely a basis and maybe as well as you would have liked to have. Pension had very strong investment returns. The OPEB, you know, we talked about, and as we go through this, we'll talk about the OPEB is the area we feel needs the most addressing for maybe some changes. So now, for the rebalancing, as Susie led me into, the rebalancing we looked at twofold. One was you had this extra money that went in, okay, and the extra money that went in, you wanted to get that invested. Plus, it was a good appropriate time to try to get yourself back to your targets. Your targets being 60% stocks, 40% bonds. So the proposed rebalancing sheet you see there was to take $10,250,000 from cash, put $9 million with Wilmington Trust, which has occurred, okay, and then the balance would be split up between Allianz, Dodge & Cox, and Harding & Loevner in the allocations that you see there, $250,000, $600,000, $400,000, as you see in that sheet. And how we came up with those numbers is we just went back. First off, we went back and said, okay, you want to get as close to 60-40 split stocks to bonds, okay? You want to get as close as you can to 48% U.S. stocks, 12% non-U.S. stocks. And then the other things we look at are the growth-value splits. You have growth stocks and you have value stocks. And also to make sure that you're well-diversified between large-cap, mid-cap, and small-cap stocks. Now, for cap, think of that, it's short for capitalization, but it really means really the size of the companies, the largest companies, the mid-sized, and the smallest companies. And so that was our recommended split to get you, let's say, actually quite close to what your targets are. Now, you'll see under global, we show a target of 22%. You might say, well, Michael, didn't you say 12% for international? That is 12% for international, because global stocks represent about 55% of the world. Okay, so if you take 55% of 22%, that puts you just about at 12%. And so that's why we target the global for 22.
Meaning there's U.S. and global.
U.S. and international to get global, yeah.
So the international would be about 12%?
About 12%, yes. Yeah. Because it's 55% of the 22%. Because global is, as I say, is roughly 55% international.
Now, I get this, you know, to keep with the target.
Mm-hmm.
The hard sell is to continue to put money in global when every day you open the paper and Greece is this and Italy's that and they're defaulting. And but I get the long-term picture of a pension fund, and they're probably temporary or a little longer than temporary situations maybe. So the hard sell is to keep, because they need money because that's where we lost value. I mean, they need dollars because that's where we lost value, I'm sure. But are you see people to continue to do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. What we're seeing actually is not only to, and sometimes it's really tough to do it. Like, say if the stock market's going, just to say the overall stock market goes down, okay, you start at 60%. It goes down to 55 or 50, and people, how can we put money into the stock market? Well, that's the time you want to. You want to buy low and sell high, you know. So when the stock market has gone down, now you'll never time it exactly right. But you know, I had some clients back in, you know, after the big crash in 2008, and you know, by about March of 2009, we said to them, you know, not that we have divine insight into this at all, but we said, you know, now's the time to at least start moving back to your targets, because your 60% is now, you know, 52-50%. And don't you know what's happened to the stock market over the last 3 years? You know, it's had a tremendous rally.
Uh-huh.
Actually, international has been a much better performer than the U.S. this year so far. And keep in mind that international is not just Greece and Italy,
right,
and Spain. It's the emerging markets. It's China, Brazil, you know, it's the Latin America, it's Germany, it's Japan, it's, you know, so it's overall international, and that has actually been a much better performer than the U.S. has. The U.S. has been strong, but the international has been even better. So,
Michael, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
I mean, I understand getting in at the bottom of the market and what that does to your, you know, mm-hmm, your averaging. But can you talk a little bit about what you think some of the things that are brewing now might have an impact on the global markets? I mean, we're talking about Syria and Iran and things like that. I know it's more than Greece, but those are, what is your firm looking at as far as that? Because I agree with you. I think big gains have been made there, but I'm not sure that those would be sustainable. How's your firm look at that?
Sure. Let me build a piece before we get to that.
Okay.
But it's a very good question. Actually, if you go all the way to tab 5, okay, which is the goals. But I think this is a very good lead-in, and I'll say especially for Sussex County, when I get to the bottom 2 points there, which says pension asset mix / actuarial assumptions, OPEB asset mix / actuarial assumptions. And I was timing this on the way down, so I think I'll be fairly close when I say this. From here to Middletown is about 65 miles, okay, roughly. So for our discussion, let's assume that number's correct. And if you were driving from here to Middletown and assuming that there are no lights and all that kind of stuff, and you had to get, it's 2 o'clock and you had to get there at 3 o'clock, you would drive at 65 miles an hour. Okay. But if you drove at 60 miles an hour, what would happen? you'd get there late, yeah. Or you'd have to leave earlier, okay? Now, let's say if you drive 60 miles an hour, but you're the type of driver, you know, you see a curve, you say, oh, you know, I'm going to slow up a little bit here. You see clouds up in the sky, say, oh, it might rain. I'm going to go a little bit slower now. Now, instead of being 5 minutes late, you're going to be 10 or 15 minutes late, or you're going to have to leave even earlier. And what I observe of Sussex County is you have actuarial assumptions that assume you're going to get an 8% return. Okay, so the actuary is assuming you're going to get an 8% return. An 8% return is targeted, figure that's about, in normal times, about 65% in stocks. If somebody wants me to work through the numbers, I'd be glad to explain that, but assume that's about 65% stocks. So even in normal times, you're driving at 60 miles an hour and you've left at 2 o'clock. So you either need to, you know, leave a little bit earlier, meaning lower your actuarial assumptions, because if you say, I'm only comfortable driving 60 miles an hour, I'm not comfortable with driving 65, then leave earlier. I mean, drop your assumed. You're not going to get to 8%. And these are not even normal times, because the actuary is assuming about 5% return on bonds. Well, even a normal, I'll call it a normal bond portfolio, which is, say, the aggregate index, roughly 5-year maturity, holds mortgages and corporates and treasuries and agencies. That portfolio, in normal times, does about 5.5%. Well, we looked it up just close of yesterday. That portfolio mix, the yield on that is about 2.5%. Well, if you have a yield of 2.5% and you hold those bonds till they mature, what are you going to get? 2.5%. So your bonds are not going to, let's say, go down the road as fast a pace as you might have thought they were. Now, with Sussex, even the aggregate was considered too aggressive, and even the Intermediate Government Credit Index, which is more conservative, was considered more too aggressive. So your benchmark is the Intermediate Government Index. Well, the yield on that right now is 0.89. So if your bonds are going to get let's just make it easy, get 1%, and the actuary had been assuming 5%, okay, then your stocks are either going to have to do really well, you know, more than the average, which an average is about 10%, or you're going to have to change your actuarial assumptions. So, excuse me for the lead-in, but I want to set the stage there that, so now, what do you do? You know, what do you do with international stocks? Because, you know, are there more clouds out on the horizon? Sure there are. There always are. And so do you allow yourself to, you know, if you hadn't put some money, or if you had put more money back in international stocks come January, you actually would have been better off than you are now. So I can't tell you, I don't think anybody can tell you, you know, which is better in the short term. In the long term, international stocks do about the same as the U.S., but it's more diversified. What we do, and actually this is why we like global instead of international, if you invest in just international, then you're going to be an international. With a global manager, if they think the U.S. is a better place to invest right now, they won't necessarily get all out of international, but they're going to more highly weight that way. And so that's that we're putting it in the hands of these big firms who, you know, because it might be right to lighten up on international right now, but 3 months or 6 months from now, it'd be better to move back in that direction. And can the investment committee first, you know, I'll say, make that determination, and then on a timely enough basis that goes to the county council, and then county council then acts on it. By the time everybody's ready to act on it, it would have moved.
So what you're saying, though, and I think it's an important point, is that the international funds are those and don't give the managers the flexibility to go back into the domestic market. The global funds will.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
That is an important point, and knowing that they can make a decision going back and forth depending on, you know, what the factors are out there, and if they have the capability.
Right. Stay away. And it may not get totally into the U.S., but they might say there's other places in the world to go to. So if we think,
right,
you know, Europe is not a good place to invest, you know, let's, or Southern Europe, you know, go to the other areas.
Are you comfortable with the returns for those two global funds, their history?
Yes, yes. I mean, do we think that the mix here in the OPEB could be improved? Yes, we do think. For everybody's benefit, as you know, as you went through the RFP process, you were limited to those who responded, and that was why you had that resolution. So are there other changes we would like to see you do in the overall? Yes. But Dodge and Cox, yes, we like that. Harding Loevner, very good fund, good performance. And we would continue to use those, think you want to use those. If you turn to tab 3, go to page 9. You'll see Dodge and Cox was up 7.4% for the past quarter. I do know that through so far this year, Dodge and Cox is up over, it's 9 or 10%. So it's had a very good year. Dodge and Cox, what you have to remember about them, though, is their highs will be higher and their lows will be lower. I mean, that's the nature there. I'll use my sports analogy. They're the home run hitter in your portfolio mix. Okay. Harding Loevner's more the singles and doubles hitter. Okay. So I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what they've done so far this year to date. But you can see, actually, you look at the since inception numbers, last year was not a good place. International stocks was not a good place to invest. International stocks were down 12%. U.S. stocks were actually up 1%. But this year, don't know, I remember off the top of my head, but international stocks had been up about 9 or 10 and U.S. more about 5 or 6, 7, something like that. So, again, that's why you diversify, but you're much more heavily weighted to the U.S. side than the international side. It's, 4-to-1 ratio, 48-12.
Is that their benchmarks right underneath it, MSCI World? Is that
yes.
As related to Dodge and Cox?
Yeah, there's two benchmarks there, and you might say, Michael, why do you give us two? Isn't one enough? The MSCI World Index includes everything in the world except for emerging markets. And when it says ACWI, it stands for all country world, which includes emerging markets. So we included that in there because for two reasons. One is that for the last quarter and for last year, you can see the one that included emerging markets actually did worse. Okay. Most people would think, wow, isn't emerging markets, isn't that a great place to invest? Well, some years yes and some years no. But that's also true of bonds. It's also true of U.S. stocks. It's also true of, if everybody knew exactly what was going to be the hot one each quarter, you'd move around, we'd all be retired, and we'd live on our yachts. So we show both of them because Dodge & Cox and Harding Loevner do have some in emerging markets. And so we want to show, here's the impact of the emerging market impact. So Dodge and Cox, we would compare them against the ACWI index. We'd compare Harding Loevner against the ACWI also. So both of them beat their benchmarks last year. But we wanted to also show you that last year that tended to be a little bit easier benchmark because anything that included emerging markets was the worst performer. So the hurdle's this high, it's easier to get over it than the hurdle's this high. We try to find what's the right hurdle. So.
Yeah, Okay.
Now, if you ask me about Allianz, that would not be one of our choices, to be quite frank. It was just the best choice that you had among those who responded. But right now you have to invest the money. So where do you invest it until you make changes? Sitting in cash, I think, is not the solution because, first off, cash is paying nothing. And you're expecting this piece of your portfolio to perform like stocks perform. So do you let that piece still sit in cash until you're ready to make some changes? Or do you do that and then over the course, maybe over the next 3 months or whatever the time frame is, takes to do some restructuring that I think is, very dearly needed in this plan, not as much so in the pension fund.
In restructuring, Did I hear you say that you liked the global ones that we had, or
better ones out?
I know you don't like Allianz, or you know, think there's better. What about the other, the Vanguard and the Ridgeworth? Although Ridgeworth did well, I think.
Yeah, Ridgeworth did well.
Yeah,
we consider them. We would consider Ridgeworth one of our. Just for some, Susie and I have had these discussions before, but just for others' benefit. Some of our clients have us do just as you do. We come, we give advice, we give you multiple choices, and you pick from one. Others turn it over to us and say, look, you deal with this every day. You pick the ones that are best. You know, you, in essence, become the manager of managers, okay? In that program that we do for some of our clients, Ridgeworth is always one of our, I'll say, we have two or three that we might like in any area. Ridgeworth is definitely one of those two or three. Okay, same thing with Dodge and Cox, same thing with Harding Loevner. Allianz is not, as I mentioned.
You suggest that we make a change now?
I think you need some change. Yeah, I think there's two changes you need to look at. The Allianz, so what we would prefer, and this, as I say, happened to be just the best, you have to deal with what you've been dealt, the cards you've been dealt, okay? So Vanguard Value and Allianz was the best combination, we thought, of the large cap U.S. stocks that were made available to you through the RFP process. We'd actually rather see you use Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund instead of the value fund, and then add one or two other managers on the domestic side. So change your value equity manager, and the piece that you don't have in there is you don't have anything in the mid-cap area. Okay, and mid-cap, going back to, I call it the Goldilocks. You know, there's the big, the middle, and the small. So they're the Goldilocks because they're not too big and they're not too small. They're still small enough that they can continue to grow at a nice pace, but not so small that when the economy goes down that they go out of business. You know, the largest companies, yeah, they might stay around, but are they going to continue to grow the way they have? You know, how much bigger can Microsoft get? How much bigger can Intel get, et cetera? So that's, I think not only do you need a change, but it may be adding another fund or two into the lineup. And you do have enough, in our opinion, you have enough money to be able to do that. You know, in fact, when we looked at this, and I'll show this when we get to the proposals, your mix of managers is costing you right now about 0.58%. A little bit over 0.5%. When we do these for our clients, it comes in about 0.4%. So almost 18 basis points difference in cost.
Well, I think we knew that from a while in the back of our head.
Sure.
When we did the RFP process, that we knew there were managers that won't, but we had to invest the OPEC, you know. It used to be, Linda, in the state pool. For your information, we do have a large chunk of the pension in the state pool, and it's very successful. But they did not manage their OPEB, and they had a very small OPEB fund. They didn't manage it the same way they did their big state of Delaware retirement pool. It was all in Vanguard, I believe, in one
Vanguard.
Mutual fund.
Vanguard index.
And they didn't have a board examine it. Like, they just didn't, because they hadn't funded it. It wasn't well funded yet. It had like two contributions, and just to get it established. And we joined in, I believe, probably because the pension pool was so successful, thinking this would get it, but it never got any more budgeted contributions from the state. Dave could probably add more to that. But it never went anywhere, and then we found an error in their calculation of allocations one year, $1 million. It was just, they gave it to one other units. They do everything in units, and we got credit for some other person's pension units, dollars, and we found it the end of the year by reconciling, so we thought we'll just, you know. Actually, their Northern Trust, who does their assets, did it. It wasn't the state that did it, but that was enough to say we'll manage our own OPEB like we do our pension fund. And then we did the RFP process, and we're stuck with, not stuck, but they're the five that we selected.
Yeah, it was a good start, But, yeah. You know, we all understood from the responses that came in that there was a need to that you were going to have to go back this year and I'll say, you know, tune it up.
And it had some good returns. It was a good start. It was a pool. So it had some good years when they're the good years.
The other thing that happened with, well, it's a state, you mentioned.
Expense, too. We were paying a state management fee and a, you know, Vanguard fee. And
They weren't really providing much management.
Right.
And there was a controller of currency edict that said you couldn't commingle the assets.
Yeah, it's public meeting.
Oh, so they have to broadcast it then?
It's in the hall.
I guess.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I thought they could come in here and listen.
Yeah,
should be.
In here.
Oh, yeah.
No. It shouldn't. Speaker on or something?
Yeah, speaker's probably on out there.
Is the council meeting in the hall too? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. Continue. I agree with you. I think we should. Do you think it's worth rebalancing and then giving us time since we have quarterly meetings to revisit the whole structure and get some? I don't know how much we can do at one time. And the other question is, if the pension works so well for us,
mm-hmm.
does it make sense to use the same assets that are in the pension, or is that sort of all your eggs are in one?
Well, I think it's
different
two issues.
Funds.
One is with the pension, you build the rest of your portfolio around what you're doing with the state. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Here you don't have the state. You know, the control of currency rate ruling said there's OPEB assets couldn't be commingled with the pension assets, okay? Plus, and the pension has done very well. The estate has done very well, but it's the term you use, it's your wild child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as conservative as Sussex County is, they invest that very aggressively. They have hedge funds, they have private equity, they have a whole kinds of lots of things that because they have the size that they have, they can do and have the oversight on. But, you know, would you want more of it? You know, like that. I think you have probably an appropriate allocation to that area in the pension side. And so I think handling the OPEB differently for multiple reasons.
Okay.
You know, there are reasons why you unwound that, and I think there's reasons, you know.
Okay.
Now, you know, my thoughts is that I think you invest with what's available to you right now.
Rebalance it,
but then spend, because otherwise your other choice is just to sit in cash. And you're still better off having Allianz and Vanguard Value Index Fund than to have it in cash. And then one of the things we're going to talk about is what is the process you do to make these changes, you know. And part of that is, you know, what your role is, what our role is, you know, what's the timing of, and what changes you want to make.
Well, how this works, that usually if there's something that anybody wants to do, everybody's a voting member now and can make a motion, and it gets second, and then we vote. It's as simple as that. And if there is a consensus and a vote, then I will take it to County Council for their recommendation to do what the committee desires. That's how we've done it before.
The question is the OPEB rebalancing.
Mm-hmm.
I make a motion that we rebalance or recommend to the County Council rebalancing the OPEB fund as recommended by Mr. Schoen.
Second. We have a motion.
Should be Pierce Park Group.
Pierce Park.
A motion and a second.
Yeah,
to
hang on the corporation on me.
To rebalance the pension portfolio, as and recommend to County Council, as shown in detail in the schedule provided by our consultants, Pierce Park Group. And we'll take a vote. Jeff.
Yes.
Aaron.
Yes.
Linda and Dave.
Yes.
And I vote yes. Okay. You can continue.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the pension, we actually are going to give you three choices here. Okay. For the pension, the first possible approach we saw was just to take enough.
I went over
know, the wait button does not allow you to be heard on the internet.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Right, so I'm just a little leery of turning the whole switch off.
Okay.
For right now, until we're positive.
All right.
Okay.
So with the pension, you know, we asked Susie, how much cash do you need to have so that it'll pay for all this year's benefits? And that number was about $2.3 million. Right now you have $3.1 million in assets in cash. If you take $800,000 out of there, that'll leave you the $2.3 to pay for the benefit payments for this year.
Would the cash be invested? How would the cash be? I mean, it's a monthly. I guess you get reimbursed each month, I guess, right?
Yes, we reimburse monthly. You mean the short-term cash?
It could be reimbursed once a year even. It's not that.
That would
help with the investment.
It could. It's still less than a year. The problem is, by the time we go to December, we really don't have a lot of months left. I mean, we cut ourselves back. We're already probably down to 9 months. Short term, whatever sits in the account, if we can get a CD, or, you know, like Michael said, if you put it in and pull it out and it goes down, you've lost your value in your investment because it's not going to have time to come back up. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I guess if you have $2.3 million and you, I guess I was wondering, instead of just leaving it in a very low interest cash account, that maybe you could buy some short-term bonds and have them mature, maybe every 6 months, just reimburse general fund December and June, so then it's okay for
extend
the
it out
set
more.
Up for the audit report, mm-hmm. and it's set up for the actuary, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. and then have bonds mature in December and June for almost $1.2 million each, maybe, something like that.
Sure, some kind of laddered approach.
Instead of.
And we can get that right through M&T. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to go shopping for another investor.
That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The same person, I don't know, Don Duramo or Dermo, whoever managed our
What you want to check with there is, if you roll it under there, they're going to charge you an asset fee of 20 basis points on those assets. And today's yield, that's going to wipe that out.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to
go direct.
You probably want to go direct, you know, as you say, if you can get CDs out there.
Okay, I'll check into that because I think I can do that on a short-term basis.
Sure. So if you did just that, okay, and then we're going to, but this doesn't accomplish any rebalancing. Then this is just getting your cash down to where it needs to be. I'll say it accomplishes a little bit of rebalancing, and I'll show you those numbers in a minute. Then we would say take that $800,000 and give it to the Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund. And the reason why we picked that one out is, in a moment we'll show you, you're actually too high on international relative to your investment policy statement. And where you're short is in the small and mid-cap stock side, and that's Fidelity is by in that fund they're picking primarily smaller and mid-sized companies, whereas DuPont is picking the large companies. Okay, so that's one option. So keep that in mind. Just $800,000 out of cash into the Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund.
Do we have any return information on these?
I'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Actually, on those, no, because we'll get to the, you know, we weren't asked to do a report on the pension fund and the OPEB. We actually did as, you know, to really show everybody what we're capable of doing. We don't have a relationship with you on doing that on an interim basis at this point. So, I don't have return numbers on that. The next one would be not just moving enough to bring your cash down to where it needs to be, but actually to rebalance your portfolio to get it to 60% stocks and 40% bonds. So that's the one it says at the top. It's page 3. It says 60/40. So it's not only taking $800,000 out of cash, it's also taking $3.1 million out of bonds and giving that money to DuPont and Fidelity. Again, in a moment on page 5, we'll show you what this means.
Did we, that gets so heavy in fixed assets, did we rebalance last year? I don't think we did.
You didn't rebalance?
Have we rebalanced since the policy statement? Like formally like this?
You have not. Sometimes you've cash flows through that, but generally no. What happened is when the stock market went down, you allowed yourself to go down below 60%.
That's
and you've never
right.
moved yourself back up to that 60.
We were at 70-30, and remember, at council, they wanted to go back to 60-40, which sways your whole, you're starting at zero again for your fixed assets.
Right.
And then the contributions that we make into the fund happened to equal the same amount of our withdrawals, so there was no money, fresh money to put into it. Mm-hmm. But it's gotten really...
Yeah. And then if you take last year, you know, bonds were up 6 to 7% because interest rates came down. You know, they had to yield, but you had to capital appreciation. So bonds did 6 to 7. You know, U.S. stocks did 1. International did 12. So even if it did start at 60-40, the bonds were going to become more than 40% of the portfolio because they outperformed. And then on top of that, you really didn't start at 40% bonds to begin with. So all those together have now put you at 50-50. So if you go back to my story about driving to Middletown, and that, you know, the actuary is assuming you're driving 65 miles an hour, you're targeting it at 60, and you're actually driving at 50. Now, you either have to leave a lot earlier, or at least, you know, put the pedal down a little bit, you know, at least back to where you want it to be, back to 60-40.
Okay.
I know the low price stock fund's doing well.
It's done very well.
I just know that right now it's.
And we've looked at DuPont numbers, and DuPont numbers, you know, did well for the year, too. They beat their benchmark, you know.
If you cash in the bonds, would you sell the bonds early, or are you proposing to wait till they mature? I know they're all probably very short term.
Well, we would go back to the investment manager. That's why we'd go back to Wilmington Trust and said, you know, we need $3.1 million. You know, look and see when those come due. You know,
right.
if a lot of them will come and due over the course of the next, say, 3 to 6 months, then I think you let them come due, and so you may not get to 60% tomorrow, so to speak. You get there over a course of, you know, a couple months. But if they don't have enough coming due, then they may want to sell some to get back to that target. You know, because although it's nice to let them come due, if you're at 50-50 and the stock market does like it did the first 2 months, you've lost so much in return by not having put yourself back to 60-40.
Or we could say wait till they have, don't pull it till it has a mature, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pull it till it has
maturity.
Might be
able to sell and make money. You know?
Well, if it erodes into the principal,
sure.
Then it would be, we wait or they choose other ones or something, you know. We can tell them what we want, the approach we want them to take.
Can we sell the ones that are in the black for us, ascertain what they are and sell those and maybe wait a little bit on the ones that are coming due that may be negative in the red as far as your value, what we paid for them? Is that done or is that just, you know, not worth it? Or?
Yeah, I would say whether something's in black or red doesn't really matter from an actuarial perspective because they don't, when an actuary does their work, they look they actually, you know, whether gain is realized or not, that, you know, they look at the market value, not at the cost value, okay? And same thing on the loss side. So it would not impact your actuarial, you know, calculations, you know. The third one, just to tweak it a little bit more, was getting you back to 60-40, but you are currently over-allocated in international in this plan. You were under on the OPEB side, but on this one, you're over. And you might say, well, how did we get over? Because the state is targeting 20% for international, okay? And they are 65% or 62% of your portfolio. So if you take 62% of 20%, that's over 12% just with that alone. So now if you add international in your own portfolio to that's going to push you up even higher. Now, you should know, and I is that Fidelity actually, even though it says Fidelity low price stock, Fidelity's fund is actually about 20% international stocks also. So you add all that together and it puts you right now about 15% international, okay, which is more than where your comfort zone was. Okay. So going to page 5.
Can I ask you a question? I'm not sure I understood what you just said.
Sure.
Even though the Fidelity low price stock is totaled in with total domestic equities, you're saying that they are how much international?
They're about 20% international.
So it's not really total domestic equities as listed here.
No, but it's not a global fund either. So it's something of a lot of retail funds, you know, if you look at like Fidelity Magellan, if you're familiar with that, and some of the American funds and some of these, even though they are perceived to be, they're not global and they're not international, but they're not straight U.S. You know, a lot of them do have 10, 15, 20% international.
Dumb question from the neophyte.
No, they're actually
group.
Very good questions.
I guess I'm sensitive. I'm not a, obviously not a county employee, but I'm trying to look at this as if this were my money. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And I know there is, as I said before, I think there's a sensitivity about global investment. Is part of your job looking at this and making sure that we don't go outside of tolerances in reality as far as versus classifications? I mean, do you know, you see what I mean? The reality is that they are invested in global funds.
Sure.
Or well, international, I can't remember which one you said.
Yeah.
But for categorization, it looks like we're fine and dandy. Do you know what I mean? Because it's listed as a domestic equity. Are you watching out for us that we don't step outside of that tolerance?
Yeah, well, first I say, we watch out for you once a year on that at this point in time, which we'll talk about. But just once a year, we ask to look at that. But when you get to page, and actually, one of the things is you have gotten outside of your tolerance, but where your biggest thing outside of tolerance was your stock bond split.
Okay.
But on page 5, we actually do break it out to say, you know, in reality, where are you? Okay. Even though Fidelity is defined as a domestic fund, it really isn't fully domestic. And so when we go, if you look under page 5, and it says under current portfolio, so we put international equity that you are actually at 14% right now. And that it does take into consideration that Fidelity is
Fidelity.
The Fidelity. Okay. And the Vanguard, and the state pool.
You've taken our needs into consideration in total, and in terms of rebalancing and getting out of Vanguard because of the extra percentage.
Right.
But it's just like everything else. It's all fine and dandy till somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
And I mean, if something happened untoward in the global economy, it could look as if we weren't sticking to our knitting.
I agree.
Very good point.
The worst thing you ever want to do is to write down you're going to do something and then not do it.
Okay.
So it's very important once you know, it's very important to have an investment policy statement, but you have to make sure you adhere to it.
By this reallocation, we are.
That's correct. Yeah, that's you know, if you want to, you know, our recommendation is we would do number 3 of that because that's going to get you closest. So go to page 5 for a moment. You would. Okay. So your targets are 48, 12, 40. Your current is 36, almost 37, 14. But your fixed income is almost 50%. Fixed income being your cash and your bonds. Okay. So if you just move the cash, that was that first option. Because that's what we were asked to do. You know, we said, okay, we had this new contribution. What do we do with it? Well, if you just invest that, you're still going to be almost 48%. Fixed income. If you do the 60-40, we get you right to actually 42% and 58%. You might say, well, Michael, why are you taking us to 42 and not 40? Because you have about 4% in cash right now, and that cash over the course of the year is going to be drawn down to 0. So that 4, if it's drawn down to 0, will average 2. So we want to start at 42 and take it down to 38 so that you average out at 40. And there's really no other way to, you know, that's because your cash is going to be paid out during the course of the year. But as we looked at that, you know, actually, because some of the money was going to go to Fidelity, okay, it was actually going to increase your international allocation. You might say, well, why don't you give it all to DuPont because they don't have international, but then you'd be over-allocated in your large cap. So it's sort of like, how do you fit all these things together? So that's why we did this other one, which says no global, which gets rid of Vanguard, okay? It's still higher than its 12%, but as long as you have 65%, just, well, 63% with the state, you're going to be over no matter what, okay? So one of your other options would be is, hey, you like the state, but maybe the state shouldn't have 63% of it. Maybe the state should have 50% of it. You know, that's, but I don't want to give you too many moving pieces here because we do like the state fund. The state's done well for you. And so, but at 14.3, at least that gets you there.
Is there another option taking into consideration the state's investment strategy or mix that the portion, the international equity target be dropped here? I mean, is that another option?
Well, if you get to the 60-40, well, with the state, you can't change their allocations.
Right, exactly.
So if you have 65% of your money with them, I'll just make it, I think it's 63, but 20% of that, you're going to be at 13% just as a start.
There.
Okay, yeah. So you're going to be over no matter what. So your options would be, if you want to get back to 12%, A, you could lower your allocation to the state, mm-hmm. Okay? B, you could get rid of Fidelity and use some other small cap fund that doesn't have international in it. Or C, you increase your target mm-hmm. in international from 12 to, say, 14. Okay. Now, I will tell you, for most of our other, say, most of our clients are more around 65% stocks. I'm not recommending that for you. I'm just giving you an observation. We do have others that are 60. The ones that are 60 do target international at 14%. So that's, but I will also say, you know, I'll say I get probably more pushback from Sussex County. If I came and said, well, increase your international right now, I'm not sure you'd be thrilled with that idea.
Well, and I don't want to beat a dead horse,
sure.
But I think that the worst thing you can do is to have a target and consistently exceed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Either raise your target or.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? It makes it look like you're not doing your due diligence.
Right. Yeah. Well, right. Keep in mind, even though there's a target in the investment policy statement, and if you haven't gotten a copy of that, you should be, okay, that there is a range within that. And the range, I forget if it's plus or minus 5 or plus or minus 3.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you're within the range that's permitted.
Okay, thank you.
So, but you're always, as you're structured right now, you're always going to be
on the
higher end of the range, but still within the permissible amount.
Unless the state changes how they
invest.
Yeah.
They have a lot more flexibility, but what we did, just to give you a little history, years ago, when we established the fund, there was very little money in it, and we decided, we just had the pension fund, we didn't have the OPEB fund, and we started, our committee basically was deciding on investments, and we did go with the state fund, we basically piggybacked with them. And we also had some fixed income with some bonds with Wilmington Trust. And then we had some mutual funds with Wilmington Trust. But anyway, gradually, as we got more and more money, we put a lot more in the state fund because they were doing so well and were ranked one of the best in the country for state pension funds. And now we've gotten to the point where we felt like we needed an investment manager. We've got a lot of money here. And we wanted some advice, and then we started the OPEB fund and got that going also. So, you know, that's sort of how the things evolved.
Looks like really well.
Yeah, your overall structure, as you know, earlier when I mentioned the OPEB, I think needs some overhaul. You know, you took a first step and you're moving in it. This, you know, I think I like the structure here. You have, you know, a good chunk of the, you know, over half with the state, but the state is going to, you know, can afford to invest more aggressively than a county could, okay? Because let's say if you have a really bad year, and actually we observed when the markets, not so much last year, but in 2008, you know, the state was down more than the rest of your portfolio. In 2009, 2010, they were above that because they, you know, paid to invest, you know, more aggressively in those years. And actually, I think even last year, even though the state did well, the rest of your portfolio did even better because the more conservatively you invested last year, the better off you were in most cases. But if you went 100% in the state, that whole mix would be more aggressive than I think, it, you know, you know, I think any county would want to be, and I think especially Sussex County. So you have a nice, I think, a nice blend between some conservative investing and then the state, which can afford to invest more aggressively because if things don't work out well, they can put more money into it, and then what happens is they have more room in their budget. They can say, well, you know, we'll give out less to the rest of the state. The county doesn't have that same flexibility of saying, well, geez, we have to put more into the county, so we'll do, you know, we'll raise taxes. Right. So that's not a good option, obviously.
Is that a recommendation Dave Baker has now?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, put in the pension fund.
Yeah.
That's why our number went up of our, why we had to keep so much cash on hand to have a new retiree.
Yes. So those are the three options as we see them.
And the state fund recently has done well also.
Yes.
They were the winner. They were the leaders, I believe, in this year's. Didn't bring it with me. The September or the October report performance.
Yeah, for the year.
Because I mean nobody.
But they did better. They were the leaders. But in fourth quarter, I mean, in the quarter when the market went down, they actually did well relative to what you'd expect them to do, but the rest of your portfolio did better.
Right.
Because it was more conservatively invested.
Yes.
So, you know, those are the things you need to keep in mind, getting back to this balance of, you know, what you don't want to do is be seduced by what happened just most recently. It's human nature saying, that was the winner last year, that was the winner last quarter. Well, that's probably about the worst time to then jump at that one. You have a structure, and you want to get back to your structure, and then from time to time you look and say, okay, is the structure right for your needs going forward?
Jeff probably watches. DuPont Capital is very interesting. Their statements of all the capital, large cap that they have in there, the large companies, and it's very. You know, they give you a very detailed statement of the sectors that they're investing in, and then, you know, what different stocks and companies that they have in that sector. They're very, I would say, conservative, wouldn't you? Just the top of the top.
Right.
And it is a good, it started off slow. I think it got in there slow, came in at a bad time. We originally invested $5 million. That was a new fund. Mm-hmm. And it started off slow, and then it dropped right away. Everything dropped, though.
Right.
But it has come back slow and steady and kind of strong, and they're a good company. They're very good to work with, too.
It's very, as you might expect with DuPont, it's a very disciplined process.
It is. You can tell by the way. I mean, it just looks, I don't know.
I like what Michael has proposed, that maybe we, in the future, we can just sort of freeze the state fund since it's so massive and just continue to invest with the others. And I like the idea that Michael had it going in with the DuPont Capital with a pretty good, you know, with transferring the funds from the Wilmington Trust bonds and going in heavily with DuPont Capital. Because when they came down here and made their proposal, they are just phenomenal. And if you read that brochure, they have physicians who actually do the analysis on healthcare stocks, and they've got, everyone has a master's degree, and some went to the Sorbonne, you know, in France. I mean, it's just, I mean, if you try to get a group of people, I mean, just it's phenomenal, their backgrounds, and they're producing. It's not just, you know, academics.
Yeah, if they want to invest in an emerging market, they go over there, and they, like, take a trip to Argentina and stay and visit, and it was an interesting proposal.
They invest the entire DuPont company pension fund, as I recall, right?
True.
It's
a lot of money.
Yeah, they invest sort of side by side with yourself, same discipline, same styles.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And they allowed us in. I think $10 million is their usual minimum.
Yeah, we were. It was.
And they let us go in with five.
We were going to go in with 10. something. Remember something happened there too. I don't know what the stocks dropped.
Yeah.
And I didn't have we didn't have as much as we thought when we rebalanced, so we had to go in with five. But. Yeah.
Well, this is 2008 or so when things were not too great. So. Kind of things were
and then they went bad. I mean, it just went reduced. No. And the council was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. But, okay.
Well, like what Dave said, that, you know, that maybe go with Mike's proposals. I mean, you know, we're in with a couple mutual funds that maybe we can do better with. And, I mean, this would seem to be, as Mike said, an opportune time to do it. I mean, hopefully we're on the maybe midway of a bull market or whatever. You know, you never know. But it'd be nice to have more exposure to equities and take the money out of the fixed assets and there. I don't know. It's just, and what you're proposing, and these mutual funds have been around a long time with good track records. We're not, you know, taking a flyer on something. So.
Was that proposal 1, 2, or 3 then?
Yeah.
Or I guess in that case, is it 2 or 3? Do you want to take the money from Vanguard also at the same time?
Well, I like Linda's idea of we have a policy statement, and that's the reason. And when at the end of the day, if your numbers aren't targeted to that, then something happens. They're like, you have this policy statement. Why weren't you following it? And so I think we should rebalance.
I like number 3.
On that purpose.
So,
I like number 3, too.
That's a pure way of doing
it. I think it's to get down to that percentage is the way we need to go.
I think we're following the policy statement the most by going with number 3. You know, and as Linda said, I mean, that way we're doing what we said we would do and what's been recommended.
Mm.
You want to make that motion? Second it?
Yeah. I make a motion that the investment for this is just the regular pension plan this time?
Yes.
Yeah. Or a regular pension plan be invested in the 60-40 no global approach number 3, as outlined by Michael Schoen of Pierce Park Group.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to rebalance the pension portfolio as option number 3, as shown in the detailed report provided by Pierce Park Group. Jeff James.
Yes.
Karen Brewington.
Yes.
Linda Messick.
Yes.
David Baker.
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion passed. Passed. So now we'll talk about, we have some more work to do, obviously, if the committee is interested in looking at the OPEB makeup of funds, of the equity funds there, to see if we can possibly take a different approach in choosing some assets from the limitations we had from the RFP. So right now, all we use the consultant for is an annual review for both the pension plan and the OPEB plan to come in, get our numbers, look at the returns, provide a policy or a performance statement, give us insight into the market, and kind of that's where it stands for the year. It's October, November, it's right when we make our contribution. However, your firm's always been available for me for any kind of phone calls. And I think there is a little piece in your in our annual contract that, you know, it's just for phone calls. And we do talk a lot because I was doing a lot of work on just in moving this money. It's not as easy as it sounds. Sometimes if it's new, not anyone's new now, but there's a lot of contracts you have to get straight, investment agreements. I feel so much more comfortable if I can run it by Pierce Park Group and like an attorney. They know what to look at. They know what we should be charged. They're completely independent of the investment manager, so they have our interests. And I think we've even had Wilmington Trust change some of their things that they've tried to pass on to us based on other contracts that you have had them do. which is more favorable to us. So any kind of time we have something new to do rebalancing or select new managers, I don't believe is in the performance, not considered a part of your annual review at this point. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
So.
I agree with Susie. I think we've made an excellent choice in going with your firm, with you.
Thank you.
I think we've done much better. You really are abreast of the market and what the good funds are, and we, you know what we like. You know, we're not out to take a flyer or take undue risk. And I think we've earned, I mean, the amount of money we've earned and the appreciation of our capital is, you know, as a result of your firm, you and your firm, I think it's been great. I mean, I think Susie pointed out it. I think it's been a positive, a great positive.
And you know, as you said, quote, most conservative customers, and you don't try to change us. You don't say, well, you need to go 50-50 because that's what they do in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And that's very, we're at where we're at because that's where we want to be. Not, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's, you don't feel a lot of pressure to, like.
Well, council needs to approve this. And when we take things to council,
there's
some pushback.
There
are a couple of people who are pretty conservative, which is fine. But we can't go in there with anything too bizarre. I mean, so, and that's what they want. I mean, so I think we're just doing what they would like us to do.
Well, they have had us change our allocation right there at the meeting on the fly, not intending that was on the agenda, but it was one of those where, and it's perception. The stocks, I don't know, 08 maybe, 09, were doing horrible. They said, we want our investment allocation changed. It was 70-30. 60-40, voted on it, was done. So the policy gets changed right there. You know, it wasn't on, and they're very conservative.
Would this require RFP?
Well, I don't know. We don't even know what we're doing. You know, we're just entertaining proposals. You know what I'm saying? As far as what kind of work do we even want? Do we want quarterly? Do we want twice a year? Do we want an annual review?
Mm-hmm. This is a professional service, though. Isn't that right? I mean,
right,
we don't have to do an RFP for professional services, do we?
Not if it's under 50.
I think, well, doesn't it fall under your new resolution anyway?
But it probably might fall under the ordinance. It's not an investment product. I don't know. That's a good question.
When we select an engineer or mm-hmm. architect or accountant,
mm-hmm.
you have to do a for anything over $50,000.
Does it not fall under that resolution, though, that you passed last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't read it for that.
You're allowed to do, you know, hire investment managers, and we're our contract, although we're consultants, is defined as an investment management consulting contract.
We can do amendments to existing contracts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we do those for engineering contracts.
Oh, without RFP in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Performance investment duties or to enter into any investment management agreements. I think we just need
to clarify
check on
it.
That.
Yeah, okay.
Would the fee, I mean, the, on the.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
Would the fee apply to the state fund?
Well, as we've defined it here, yes. Okay. Now, when I gave this to Susie, said, you know, give us several different choices.
Right.
So, I gave it a couple, and she said, well, I might want to talk about option 4 or 5. Now, the state fund, I believe you would want us to, if we're going to show you what the whole plan does, then we have to gather that information from the state. You wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't be managing it for you, but we'd have to gather all the data, and we do. We talked to them, you know, we talked to them just last week and said, you know, we need your returns, we need this information, we need the holdings, so you could see the overall mix. That was the only way we were able to tell you you're over-allocated in international, because the state is allocated, this is their benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one of the things that I had thought about, even after I did this, is, you know, we've given a fee for, you know, sort of wrapping both plans together. The other approach might be to say, look, our needs are different on the OPEB fund than the pension fund. So how about if, you know, maybe it's a different fee structure on one and the other. Okay. So, you know, we as I told Susie, let's figure out what it is you want us to do first. And then we can say, okay, then here's what we think is an appropriate fee for that.
So with the option one here, mm-hmm. you would report each quarter on each fund, and that would have performance reports on each fund,
right?
Like you did for the OPEB,
right?
Today, would you? And it has asset manager recommendations. Would that include recommendations regarding individual investments, as well as the 60-40 and all that? But would it include recommendations like to change, like we were talking about, change the Alliance and Vanguard Value?
Sure. What it would be, think of the first one as, I'll call it advisory. So we might come back and say, okay, we think you should terminate Alliance and Vanguard Value, okay? And then you guys would say, okay, bring us some choices. And we would bring you, say, three choices in each of those areas.
Okay.
And you would pick from those choices.
Okay.
Okay. So we would give you advice on the total fund also, because then we'd say, okay, so how's it fit into the total fund? You know, if you use, like a Fidelity, if you have Fidelity in there, yeah, it's a good fund, but they also have international. Is that going to drive you up over your international targets?
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, all advisory. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that, but yes, I think
okay, I see. So, like between a one and two, you're actually doing a lot of this for, so to speak. Yeah. You would, rebalance, you would handle it instead of Susie being involved with talking to the managers and whatnot.
Well, I still have wiring instruction, but investment contracts, yeah. I'm guessing.
Number two, we wouldn't come back to you and say, here's three choices. We'd say, you know, we want to add a mid-cap fund. We're going to add that in there. We're going to change this, and we would automatically take care of that. You know, we would pick the one that we would like the best, and we might even add some. And so it's management, but not like a stock manager. We're managing the overall portfolio. If it's time to rebalance, we actually look, like in option one, we'll look at your portfolio, every month and a half or something like that, because it's advisory. And the second one, every Monday morning, we get, we've got seven clients that have us do this. Every Monday morning, we look at it. We look at each of the funds that you have. We look at, your allocations. If you've gotten over or under the allocations, then we rebalance the portfolio.
They move the money themselves. Then that's no going to council and getting approval. And, number one, we still go to a council based on advisory. And I think I would like to stick with that.
Yeah, I think number two might be a little...
Which I'm not saying that's not,
Bar for us right now.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to show you, different options here. Just, number three would be still left to council to make the final decision. But instead of us, we would monitor it every week instead of, every couple of months or so. And we would come and give you a specific recommendation. Instead of saying, here's three choices, we'd say, here's exactly what we would do. We would do this, we'd do this, we'd do this, we would change this, here's that. But then again, it would be the council that had to vote on it. So if number one's what you like the best, that's fine. But I wanted to let you know that number three is another option that's sort of in between one and two.
Just for a side point, the customers that you do go in weekly and rebalance, mm-hmm. how are their returns as compared to in a comparative way?
Better. Better by about,
curious.
About 0.5% a year. Yeah. And it's because even if we come to you and we say, you want to make three changes. Right now, like OPEB, we'd probably make three changes. So we're going to give three choices here, three choices here, three choices here. And the next time we're going to get together, maybe it's 3 months from now. Okay? So 3 months from now. And then you're going to have to, okay, so do I mix this with this one? But I might like this one, but then if I like this one, well, does it change which one I like over here? So just, be aware of that. It just takes a longer time for implementation. But again, it's back to, as you said, whatever your comfort is. But that's, in your case, you know, if you go a step further, if you go to page, and actually it's not a number on it, but under, after option, actually after option, so there's option three, and then there's the check page, but you go a little further and go to the, there's one that says performance and costs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is just the OPEB fund. So if you did option one, your current management fee is 58 basis points. Your consulting, if you know, if you have us do quarterly and all that, would be 10 basis points at 68. The mix that we thought about, okay, what mix would we end up with for you if we did, you know, and that would end up at about 40 basis points. Our consulting was 17, and actually that ends up at 57. So you'd actually end up less expensive.
So you would move like towards more index funds?
We do some more indexing, that's for sure. You know, I'd say probably, there's a couple things we would do. You know, even though we like Ridgeworth a lot, it's our number two choice. So there's another one we like better. So we've actually had our clients change, and that's about 25 basis points cheaper on that side. We'd use some indexing in the mid-cap space and the large-cap space, but at the S&P 500 level. And on the international side, we do a little bit more, a little bit of changes. Even though we like Harding Loevner, we would probably take some from them because they're 1%, and there's other managers out there that are, you know, at 50 or 60 basis points. Mm-hmm. So these are, it'd be a combination of things that would get you there.
Maybe as Dave and Susie said, we could just dip our toe in the water to start with and go with one.
Sure.
And down the road, I mean, there's...
If you think you want to change...
Let me ask you this. What if we do a new manager and I need a new contract? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to pay for that extra, would I?
You would not.
No.
No.
That's what I'm asking. Would I... Like, for right now, every time we did something with, like, the investment with Realty Transfer Tax and all and a statement, you know, it was a fee for service, which is fine because we weren't mm-hmm. contracted for anything other than annual review at a stated price. But if I, with option one, if we're moving money around and it's a new portfolio and we have a new contract and I could run all that by you and not – would be included, even though it doesn't specifically say as a bullet point, new. You know what I mean?
We could write that right into the contract. So it truly is a retainer relationship. So anything, you know, like, you know, so you could pick up the phone anytime you want to, and the clock isn't ticking on you. So you can call me even more.
Feel bad.
If you informed us of a better fund, I mean, couldn't we call an interim meeting and then possibly go... So we could do it relatively quickly and right away a quarter if we needed to.
Sure, yeah.
A quarter for us is a lot more frequent than, you know, what we've had. This is a lot more frequent than what we've had.
Which now we got $55 million, I think, total. So
77
between the two,
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, I was thinking that.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. And so what I would think is that, I would suggest is that, since OPEB needs some scrubbing up.
That needs
scrubbing. Is that we don't wait a quarter for that. Okay, we would come back to you and say, look, hey, here's what we think you should do. We think you need to add a mid-cap. Here's three choices here. We think you need to change Allianz. Here's what you do, you know. But again, advisory, three choices, not here's it specifically, because then you have to make the decisions. But we could do that. And then once you get it, I'll say, where you want it, quarterly is fine, you know. You don't need to meet more, unless some event happens. So even though we only reporting quarterly and we wouldn't be under option one, we wouldn't be monitoring it weekly for you like the other options, we're still aware of those funds. You know, we're still aware, you know, if somebody's having a real struggle, it's not like we're going to say, oh, we're not going to open up Sussex books and see where they are. We're going to look at all of our clients. You know, if so-and-so, a key manager leaves Dodge and Cox, you know, we're going to let all of our clients know whether they're option one, two, or three. We're not going to, you know. No.
And to put it in perspective, the amount of money that we had been spending was around $50,000 for the annual service and some extra work mm-hmm. as needed through the year. Mm-hmm. I calculate this to be at 10 basis points, roughly $77,000.
Right.
So, I mean, it's higher. by 27,000. I mean, this I'd have to take it to council, but just to put it in perspective for the work, because we weren't getting doing quarterly reports, nor and everything else was extra.
And I think on the OPEB side, we can save you much more than that. I can't tell you on the pension side we'll save you more than that, but on the OPEB side, I think
because of different managers,
right?
How does that fee compare to how your charges for other public?
Glad you asked. You've got the best deal out there. to give you some idea, a number of the counties that we let's start with if they're traditional consulting, okay, just option one, mm-hmm. and they have just one plan, we're charging like you know most of those counties. You know, about $75,000 to $80,000 for just one plan. Okay, now they have a couple more investments than you. Most of them have like 8 to 10 investments. So you have that through the state, but you have two plans, and that's definitely more work than one plan. Okay, for the ones where we do option two, it depends on the client, but most of them are anywhere from 25 basis points for plans of roughly the same size as you, to others might be lower basis points, but we have one county that's paying us like about $180,000 a year for doing option two for them. Now they have two plans, but so that's significantly more than what you're looking at. Partially because of the size of your funds, and partially because I know Susie's Dave's going to beat me up price wise. So I just like let's go to our lowest price just from the start. I'm used to these two people. So,
if you're in the right funds, though, you can make up $77,000 pretty quickly.
Well, that's a good point, because on the page above that, we show what actually on that same page, we show the red is what your OPEB fund did, and the others are what our other type clients did.
What page are you on?
It doesn't. Unfortunately, we didn't put a page number on that, but it's the one where I showed you the cost, where it says performance and cost.
Okay,
so it's under tab 4, and it's the last page.
Mm-hmm.
Why we put numbers on the rest of the pages and not?
It says 19 on mine. Do I not have the right page?
Oh, does it? I might have one. It says performance and cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Does yours have a number on it?
Oh. I'm wrong.
No.
Tab 4, last page.
Got it.
Okay. So the red is your fund. The red, to the left-hand side is for the fourth quarter. To the right-hand side is for the three quarters, because you invested your money roughly the end of, the tail end of the first quarter. So this would be for second, third, and fourth quarter of last year. So, and why I showed you all four was because we have both what I call 60M, a 60C, a 65M, and a 65C. C is for conservative. M is for moderate. So we have learned over time, even some of our clients who are 60s, some sort of want a moderate approach, and some, like yourselves, want even conservative within 60. So the 60C is probably the most appropriate one for yourselves. Okay. Over the three quarters, it was the best performer of those four model portfolios. And that's because the markets were down. It's the most conservative. It was down 1.3. You were down 6.2. So I think
a lot of that's fixed assets, right?
Part of it's because you sat in cash last year when you could have had it in bonds.
We were waiting for the legal decisions.
Legal decisions around that issue.
What we could do or not do.
But it wasn't totally all that. It's also because of the lineup of the funds we had. And I would say waiting on that probably cost you about 2.5% last mm-hmm. year. It's about, because the difference between bonds and cash was about 6%, and if that's 40% of the portfolio, that's 2.4. So that's how I come up with that, roughly 2.5% of that difference would be attributable to that. Last quarter, same thing. It's the same issue at hand there. So,
well, Susie's going to quarterly meetings. That's one thing I think we all agreed on. We have to be more vigilant and attend more meetings.
Yeah.
Now that we have quite a bit of assets under management, and things change rapidly, it's kind of good that we're meeting more often.
Yeah.
Making changes as needed.
Well, even starting with changing the ordinance to a 7-member body and all voting and kind of helps, you know, the committee to, and then to report back to county council on a quarterly basis. And it is a large asset.
Yes.
You know. So it's, you said, you know, if option one is where your comfort is, yeah, you do that, and you may always stay there, or sometime you might change. But that's, you know, that's what I want to stress, is that we're, you know, we're flexible. We want each, some clients want one, some want the other, and we're, you know, we're designed to handle it either way, whatever's best for Sussex County.
I do know we have to take a look at the OPEB, regardless of whatever services we choose. We need to look at that before we get too much longer into the, after we rebalance, because now I can rebalance if I go to council.
Do we have any comparisons on what others charge?
No, I don't have any.
State or some of the other, do we check Newcastle or Kent County?
What they pay?
What they pay for an advisor, you know, just to be sure.
So I do know
what
Dover uses. Dover use Pierce Park Group? Okay.
Yeah, they're, Newcastle, I think, is at 8 basis points, but that's on $400 and some odd million dollars. I would love to have. That's about $300,000 a year. So, you know, quite frankly, you know, account that size gets a little, you know, gets a better pricing. But
these are, the higher the amount under management, the lower the management
fee. Yeah, there's either break points or just sort of rolled all into a lower fees. But they're at 8, and that's, as I say, a much, much larger portfolio. I'm pretty sure they're at 8.
I do know all of them, including Kent County, have consultants.
Yeah.
That, I mean, for us, that was a new concept just for 3 years ago. So,
sure.
And I believe,
essential.
David, I have that information. I think
I just don't have it
because it's in all my papers. I think I looked at it before, probably this time last year.
Would you consider a separate fee? I guess I just have a, I know you'd have to analyze information from the state, but you're not really.
There's a good point to be made for it.
Working on the state.
Yeah, so I don't think you spend the amount of time on that state fund as you would on reviewing, like, the value of small cap and
all
that stuff.
Probably less than others, but more than what you might think, because we do go and analyze, you know, how much they have in hedge funds, how much they have in private equities, what kind of exposure they might have from that. And actually, one of the things we came across is that, you know, their stated fee is 33 basis points, but when you actually dig into it, and we really had to dig into it, is that they have contingency fees to a number of these managers, especially in the hedge fund and private equity area, and that's why we found out that actually the overall cost at the state plan is 78 basis points. So there is but when I priced this, I took that into consideration. So if you want to pull that out or treat that differently, I'd have to push it higher somewhere else. So I sort of figured out what I thought was appropriate for something of the size, and it was in this sort of $75,000 to $80,000 range, and that's how I came up to 10 basis points. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask for it either way. if you want quarterly meetings and you want, you know, the interaction that Susie and I do during the course of the year, you know, we've had a lot, you know, beyond our initial work that, you know, the work we did on project work, there's a lot of work we've done sort of, I'll say, with an understanding, hopefully, that there'd be more relationship, that, you know, all the negotiation with Wilmington Trust, multiple emails with them, getting the assets transferred, doing the rebalancing, and none of that was under our project relationship.
This includes quarterly meetings here?
This includes quarterly meetings here, yes.
What about council? Throwing yourself as needed? Well, we know you come to the annual one.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that. Unless there's work to be done, I would like to report to council from the quarterly meetings.
Sure.
But if I don't have a motion to make any changes, then it's just a report, and I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, that's fine. And the way I always like to do business is say, look, let's try it out for a year, and at the end of the year, if you say, if it turns out that we're doing a whole lot more, you're having us down here a lot more often, I might come back to you and say, look, we need to tweak it up a little bit. Or if it turns out that, you know, it's less, then, you know, say to you, or you say to me, well, we want to work with you, but, you know, you need to bring it down a little bit. And so,
or maybe we need 3 meetings a year. Maybe, yeah. You know, a biannual review instead of a quarterly review.
Yeah.
Once we get set to where we have our assets and our, we rebalance after the contribution and then we go till the summer, you know. I mean, there are options.
There surely are options. I mean, I'll say from my experience with my clients, and everybody, you know, choose as you wish, but when we do a annual, whether it's biannual, we're still having to calculate the monthly returns to link them up to get to the quarterly. So although it might make it less, it's not going to make it dramatically less. Because it's not just issues like it that. You know, I think one of the big things that you're going to really need to tackle, and we can help you with this, is this issue of your actuarial assumed rate of return. Okay? If you're assuming 8%, as I say, you're just not...
The actuaries brought that up, too.
Yeah.
So
then you get into these discussions of, okay... So if you lower it, do you lower it to 7.5? Do you lower it to 7? Do you incrementally lower it, you know, over time? Because when you lower
it... You guarantee 8%, right? That's in that's number one, option one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, actually, that's under option number 2.
Well, maybe we ought to do 2 then.
Guarantee, yeah.
Yeah. And I'll have to post a heavy bond for that one, I understand. Yes, the performance reports are important, but I think it's, we call it the holistic consulting, the overall, how do all these pieces fit together, the liabilities and the assets and working with the actuary. I think that's really your next step, you know, of some of the things that we can bring to the table for you. Because ultimately, why do you have these funds? It's to pay the obligations and to make sure it's done, and the payment of that, is done by those who receive the benefits, the constituencies nowadays, not pushing on to the next generation. And I think you do a pretty good job of that, but right now there's issues I think you need to look at on the overall global, and, you know, that's part of what we'd like to help you with. So I think we can bring you some assistance there. So anyway, point being, I would say, is that what you might want to consider starting out quarterly, and if you find out to be too much, then let's go back and revisit this. The worst thing that could happen to me is you say, wow, we really like that Pierce Park, but man, they're charging us too much. And I don't have a chance to come back and say, well, let me either show you why there truly is that value or to readjust that price. You know, I want to continue a long, good relationship. And I may live in Westchester now. I'm a Delawarean, so my Delaware clients to me are just a little bit more important to me than my
each quarter, you're going to have recommendations. If we go that route to have delete any fund, add any fund?
Absolutely. Yeah, under option one, we will definitely come to you and say, look, we think you may need to make these changes. Here's what you do. But again, we'll bring you choices. We won't say, here's exactly what we would do. So just
think that's
recognize
more
that.
In line. That would fit better with how we've been
Absolutely.
Yeah. At our current size, you know.
It wouldn't work.
It's not like we're overwhelmed with all these different funds to choose from. I mean, it's... Yeah. We've got a relative handful of funds to deal with.
And I'd say surely in a pension, I don't think you, as I look through this, I don't think you need anything more than option one. Option two, I think I could sort of go either way on that. But so I'd say do option one and then if option two. Someday down the road, you might say, well, we want option one on this one, option two on that one. That's okay also.
My only concern is I think we just need to compare the price just to verify what others, you know, locally are paying, and also just to be sure legally we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think council might be open to it.
And then the budget, too.
Well, we'll be going into the budget. By the time we get to the next quarter, you wouldn't be paid till next year. Summer. I can do that.
Okay.
All right. right. Do we want to come back or have any motion or see what the answer or anybody got? Can put that into anything?
You think there might be a better deal, Dave?
Pardon?
You don't think right now the 10 basis points is a good, I mean, I know you want to verify anything, but it seems like
I'm not saying it isn't, but I just feel like we need just to be able to say what the others do to verify that it's in the realm of what others are doing locally, something comparable, you know. And then I just feel like we ought to be sure that we don't have to go to or check Everett to be sure.
Right.
We don't have to,
we should be cheaper because if the others are having their selected.
Pardon me?
We'll probably be cheaper since some of the other counties are having their investments decided for them by, you know.
Well, right, yeah. I mean,
so it's not
a different service, right, yeah.
But,
right.
I know what you mean, though, yeah.
Well, maybe we can make a motion. I mean, if the
I can
subject
send,
to
right.
review
right.
comparable right. prices or.
I'll send that email out.
And legal review and budget, legal and budget review.
Okay.
Something like that. I mean, what do you, is that something? Okay, be it moved that we recommend to the county council hiring Pierce Park Group on an ongoing basis. Subject to review of prices and legal and budget review.
Okay, got a second?
Second.
I have a motion to select option one offered by Pierce Park Group for the fiscal year, for this fiscal year 2012, subject to the following: a price review where I will check prices and send out emails regarding surrounding counties, a legal check by our county attorney to read the ordinance and establish that we do not need an RFP process as written in ordinance, and that the budget, there will be funds in the budget to pay for the consulting service if approved by county council. Jeff
wait,
James?
Wait, can I just, you don't have to have, I just, the plans could pay for them, not the but not all the budget itself. Just so
well, that's certainly an option, but we have never done that
okay.
in the future. We have budgeted our consultants in the general fund, so for right now, it is a budget
okay.
concern because
didn't
that's where it would be paid.
Okay.
We have never done that, so that's something the committee we're going to talk about in a
sure.
second.
Okay.
Jeff
Sorry.
James,
yes.
Karen Brewington,
yes.
Linda Messick.
Who made the motion? Who seconded it?
David made
the motion,
and
I seconded
and
it the first
seconded.
Time.
I
don't
know. Okay. Who seconded it now? Nobody seconded it?
I did the first time, yeah. I mean, it was brought up.
Did
when
Jeff
Dave,
oh, okay,
seconded.
Jeff seconded it.
Then we discussed
Linda
more.
Linda Messick and David Baker
yes.
and Susan Webb, yes. Okay, that motion. So I have three motions to take to county council in the next meeting. Anyway, I don't want to keep anybody. We've been long enough. The goals and additional. Are you done your presentation? I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'll say yes. Other than I'd say on tab five, you just might. You know, we put here what you might want to consider getting accomplished. I always think it's good at the beginning of the year to say, okay, so what do you want to get accomplished during the year, so that hopefully at the end of the year you can say, okay, yes, did you get these things done? And these were the things that. The investment contract, which is completed now, the asset transfer to Wilmington Trust, which is completed, the rebalancing of the portfolio, you've made a resolution to take to the county council. And then the other things I think you want to think about is the OPEB manager restructure, you know, what the rebalancing policy will be going forward, you know, implementing that rebalancing, okay. I think that the pension investment policy statement needs to be reviewed. It was written 3 years ago, and so I think it actually needs a little bit of cleanup and tweaking. It's not exactly the same as the OPEB one, and over time, just things, you know, from legal perspective and things, so I think it needs to have a review and maybe a little bit of cleanup work on it. And then the last two, which I mentioned before, is this issue of the actuarial assumptions versus your asset mix.
This
yeah.
is- You absorbed before about the Greek debt crisis. I got an email, I think it's from the Wall Street Journal, that stated they're going to refinance all their bonds at a great discount, issue new bonds that for much less, and that may be solved, which is only one of their problems, but they might have the refinancings done on their Greek debt. Is that right, or something like that?
Well, it's almost every week there's a different idea how to deal with the Greek debt. I don't know whether they have fully addressed it. I mean, you know, they may eventually. Right now they're trying to figure out they can't afford it. There's just, you know, it seems like there's no way they can afford it. And so somebody's going to have to take a hit. And the question becomes, who takes it? And everybody's battling to that last moment. It's like closing a real estate deal or whatever. Who's going to pay for this piece of it? And so the hedge funds are fighting and the investment managers are fighting and the different countries are fighting. Where they get to it. Myself, I'm conservative enough, I'd stay away from it. You know, somebody might make a ton of money on that. Somebody might just, it's just not my mentality, it's just stay away from it.
There's way too much risk for
way too much.
Yeah.
Before we adjourn. adjourn.
Say that again.
Adjourn. I have one question, and Dave can offer input from his background. But is there any consensus to pay pension expenses out of the pension fund, and what your feelings in that? Not only the consultant, but we have Wilmington Trust bills us direct, DuPont Capital bills us direct. DuPont Capital is about 4,000, $4,000 a month. I mean, we're paying a lot of expenses now. It's upwards of $100,000. Actuary can go to the pension fund, and that's the actuary of the OPEB and the pension fund, so that's probably 12 each, 24,000, 77. I mean, we're up to where the general fund could probably need the budget. Just any thoughts from the whole committee, just so you know that all the pension expenses is a budgeted general fund expense. It does not come out of the pension fund.
If you do that, you're reducing your funds in the pension fund.
Right.
You
know, well, it comes out
difficult. They have to be worked into the contribution somehow.
What's best? I mean, what's industry best practice? I don't know.
Probably pension fund.
I would say,
but there's more disclosure, I think, if you have it separate.
Well,
it's more
under GASB. That's going to be
more likely to review it, regularly.
Sure, I'd say best practices. I don't know anybody else that doesn't pay it through the pension fund, and it is a qualified expense. You know, our fees, the management fees, the custodian fees, the actuarial fees. Ultimately, does it get paid because it changes what your annual contribution is? Yes, it does, but it gets smoothed over, a longer time period actuarially.
Is there a different view because this is public money versus private pension fund money? Do you know what I mean?
Of sure.
Private industry, is there a different way that it's looked at?
I don't think so, and at least my impression or opinion. And actually, as you said, if under GASB's new promulgations in 2013, there's a lot more disclosure. It's going to go into financial statements. Mm-hmm. That both from the expense and the net liability. So I don't know every last little detail of that pronouncement, but I believe that's going to have to show up as an expense in your audited financial statements under your pension plan, which then rolls in, and it's part now of the overall financials of the county.
I believe David's definition for that of disclosure was a little bit different interpretation. I think you mean we have to revisit it each year.
Right.
We revisit it and disclose it as a pension fund. Now, we don't really budget the pension funds per se. We budget benefits and contributions, but it's not in the budget like the pension fund, the general fund, and they're in the budget. Yeah. So
you should know that in your mutual funds. The mutual funds,
there's expenses in set
are already sitting there and are paid by the pension fund, and in the state at least part of that is already set in there. So you're already doing that sort of anyway to some degree.
All the budget committee.
Susie, Well, the investment cost, is that 100% picked up by the general fund?
Right now.
The water and sewer doesn't kick in anything? Or
no, it just was never a big enough billing to, I mean, we could allocate it around, but if we're going to take it out anyway, then.
Yeah. But yeah, if you do it that way, yeah, then yeah, I would not need to do
That's a good point. That's about 20% typically.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. It is 3 o'clock. Unless any comments, I know, Linda. Appreciate it. I hope you was informative. I know. I'm sorry, because I told you an hour and a half.
Thank you for taking your time to participate, Linda.
It's interesting. Thank you, guys. It's an honor to be here with you.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. And as far as we know, we'll stick with the letter, the dates in the letter. And, you know,